You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. I'm Tina Spindler, and welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm so excited today because we have a great topic, and it's because our seasons are changing. We're moving from summer into fall, and beginning of summer, we had a great guest on who we have again today because it's the perfect time to revisit this topic, and that's the topic of planting perennials in your garden. And our guest today again is Nicholas Stadden. Nicholas, thank you so much for coming back. We really appreciate it.
Well, Tina, we can't let anyone know where we are because this is kind of a secret location, but it really is my privilege to be back. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. And Nicholas has so much information to share with us today because if you are a new gardener or have been a traditional springtime gardener, we are actually coming up on what is my favorite time of year to plant, and that's in the fall. And one of the great plants to plant in the fall are any kind of perennial plants. They absolutely love being planted in the fall. It gives them a chance in our mild winters, hopefully if we get some rain, to really settle in, and then come the springtime and summer to just burst forth in all their glory. So, Nicholas, thanks so much. Tell us where you want to start talking about perennials today.
Books.
Books.
I'm a passionate reader. I'm on and off the internet like everyone else, but I have this growing library, which, as usual, continues to be a bone of contention between my bride and I. And I think last time I mentioned several books. Today I think I'm going to just mention a couple of three. But I actually came home from a trip once to find my entire library on the doorstep in boxes.
Yeah. No.
So a couple of expensive bottles of champagne later, my library was reinstated. So.
Oh dear.
But, yes. But so last time, everyone at home, I mentioned four or five books, and I'm just going to be repetitive. One of them was Landscape Plants for California Gardens by Bob Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. That's an absolute must for your bookshelves. And then we also spoke about California Garden Guide by Nan Stearman, S-T-E-R-M-A-N. And Nan actually has just been recognized by the Paul Ecce Award.
Wow.
Which is a tremendous privilege. This
people. Poinsettia people.
Yes. Yeah. And this is an award that everyone from all over America competes for. So Nan has got the number one slot, which is really good. So she's a great gardening lady. And so the other two books I'm going to mention today, one is called Fine Foliage. And I'm going to, unfortunately, those of you at home can't see this, but it's a small book. I think it's probably about $18 on the on the shelf. It's a hard copy book. It's written by a lady called Karen Chapman and Christina. And Karen Chapman is a landscape architect up in Seattle. She has traveled all over America and put together this wonderful collection of drought-tolerant plants, foliferous plants, plants for containers, tropicals, you name it. But it's how to use all these different types of foliages together.
And I can tell you the photos, because I'm looking at the book as Nicholas turns the pages, are stunning.
They're really good.
With just foliage, no blooms.
They're fun, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I think what's really good for, you've got one page, which is the collection of plants together, and then the other page lists out all the individual plants and how they look, so you can make your own designs.
That is so helpful for me, because that's my problem, is knowing what to combine.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah. Gorgeous.
So then the other book I've got is a real keeper. This is a book called Durable Plants for the Garden, and it's a plant select guide. Plant Select is a new plant introduction program in Colorado. It's a collaboration between the Denver Botanical Garden and Colorado State University. And it's a long story that I'm not going to bore you with. But some years ago, they put this book together. About 5,000 copies were printed, and they sold out overnight. And I'm going to just open up the pages so Tina can have a look. Here's a columbine. So we're looking at a columbine. You'll only find the book in a used bookstore now, or you can go online. You know, there might be some for sale there. Buy this book. You have to have this in your collection.
I do not have it.
It's a great pictures, great information on the plant, and then each plant has a hand drawn plant where someone has hand drawn and hand colored this
end.
It's great.
You know what I like about this is they are telling you the disadvantages of the plant, which no one hardly ever does.
They don't.
When you're looking at books, it always tells you a lot of information about the plant, but mm-hmm. rarely do you ever see any disadvantages. So that's pretty cool.
It's spectacular.
Yeah.
And so here's the fun part. There are many of these plants that will do very well in our Mediterranean climate. And go online and look for a company called High Country Gardens, run by David Salmon. And many of the plants that are actually in this book, you can buy mail order. So you can get them for your garden. But it's absolutely fantastic. And then my good old Royal Hort Society. Have you renewed your membership,
yes,
Tina?
Yes, I love it. Now I feel so special now that I'm a member.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
Yeah. So I did my membership the other day. And what we're gonna focus the majority of our time today on planning your garden for next year. But where this ties into our discussion today, the new magazine, is it the August issue? Yep, the August issue has this great collection. It's called Flowers from Home. And the cutting garden is just this incredible trend over in Europe again. It was trendy years ago. And it's got to come to America.
You're talking my language.
Yeah.
Everything I plant, the first thing I think about is, can I cut it? Can I bring
it
inside?
Yep. Yeah. Isn't it wonderful? And I think that the cutting garden is, you know, it really doesn't have to have a great amount of structure to it. The whole being of a cutting garden is that in California, we can be harvesting flowers or foliages, grasses. We're going to talk about grasses today as well. We can be harvesting plumes 365 days
absolutely.
A year when that plant looks good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the two pictures that Tina and I are looking at are two vases just brim full of flowers and all sorts of things. Yeah. And the other thing is, if you get on with your neighbors, right, and once you've filled your garden up, start planting in their garden, right? So you should be telling them what to have. So that's always good as well.
And have a cooperative arrangement that you can take bouquets from one another's gardens.
Exactly. And I think the few times it's happened to me where I've been to somebody's home and when you've left, they have given you a posy or a bouquet of flowers to take home, it just melts everyone's heart.
I had a dinner party a few months ago and you know, people will bring you little hostess gifts, a bar of, you know, scented soap or whatever. And this one lady just went out in her garden, and she cut, I think, some of everything that she had in her garden and made this huge bouquet.
Yeah.
And it was stunning. And what it told me is I'm usually way too structured, and it's like, oh, I'm going to choose my color palette for this bouquet and, you know, have, you know, three of these and six of these and so on. She just went out there and just
and
made
did it.
This very exuberant bouquet, put it together, and it was stunning. And I was so touched by it, and it's the best hostess gift I've ever received.
Isn't it fun?
Don't be afraid to give people homegrown bouquets. They'll love them.
So we could do a, if you're up for this, we could do a radio show on the cutting garden.
What a great idea, because we're always looking for, I'm going to write that down, we're always looking for new shows.
You know, we could do it with, you know, just walking around a neighborhood somewhere, or we just harvest things and we bring them in and we tell people how to use them and things like that.
I love it. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
Okay, so all right, so that's kind of the book, book side done for
good,
the moment.
Good. Now I have my list.
Yeah. So I think the other thing I was down in Houston last week, and the week before that I was in Arizona. So most of my time
A contrast.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And most of my time is spent working with two companies. One is called Mountain States Wholesale, which is a company based in Glendale, and they have a fantastic selection of plants for the Southwest, and we're going to talk a lot about those today. And the other is a fabulous company here in California called Village Nurseries, and they have a retail garden center actually in Orange. So a lot of the plants we're going to talk about today can be purchased from either of these companies. I think it's fun to talk about plants that people can find.
Yeah, I think so too.
But so I was in Arizona. Arizona's having their monsoon season, and I've never seen anything like it. in Arizona, where there was one area while I was there that was a square mile that had 3 inches of rain in an hour in Phoenix. And you have to be so careful because the freeways, where you go underneath the freeway, very often there's a low spot, and they'll fill up with 3 or 4 feet of water these low spots are used to get water off the surface of the land into the big channels.
Oh, like a canal
almost. Yeah, it's fascinating. So you have to be really careful. And then last week in Houston, we've all heard about the terrible floods in Louisiana, but Houston was awash with water. I mean, incredible. But what do they want? They all want drought-tolerant plants.
Which cracks me up because I don't know that they ever have droughts there, but maybe.
Well, they're Texans, right? You know, so if you're from Texas and you're listening to the program, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because I don't.
There's a lot of Texas that does need drought-tolerant plants, maybe not Houston itself.
Yeah, exactly. But the water moves fairly briskly off the surface of the land. They have a lot of limestone, you know, which is down there, and then you've got this hard red clay. That, you know, once it gets packed, then the water runs very quickly off the surface. So the trade show I was at is called the TNLA, which is the Texas Nursery Landscape Association Expo Show. And very well attended, tremendous diversity of plant material. It's probably one of the best green goods shows I've been to in many years.
Oh, wow.
And as with Texans, bless their hearts, they're into these massive trees. So there'll be people selling, they'll have them on display. They'll have a tree that's 30 or 40 feet high. And it's got like they'll bring it into the show.
Oh my goodness.
It's got a root ball on it the size of this room.
Oh my gosh.
Right? We're sitting in a room that's got to be, what?
12 by 12?
12 by 12. They have these incredible root balls on them, right?
Oh my gosh.
So these trees look fantastic. And then, you know, they'll plant them after the show. So it's really fun seeing what's going on down there.
Well, the Texan lots are usually a little bigger than our Southern California suburban
huge.
Lots.
Yep.
Yeah, so
huge.
We probably couldn't plant the size trees that they plant, sadly.
We could all go down. We could sell our homes, and we could all go down there and buy some estate, right? And probably have a couple of hundred acres to run around on.
There.
So, okay, so I thought it might be fun to talk about next year.
What we should plant in the fall next year, absolutely.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we listen to the weatherman, and I listen to Channel 7 because I think they're really good, listen to the weather people, they're now talking about a bit of a cooling trend, I think.
Yes.
So we are going to go into autumn. The days are going to start to grow a little shorter. The nights are going to be a little bit cooler. We're going to start to see some changes in our landscape. Those of you that are blessed with plants that take on some autumn color, you know, whether you've got liquid ambers or some other types of plants, we can...
Or I have a Chinese pistache that always does a great show in the fall.
I think I'm going to talk about that
talk
as
about
well.
That? Oh,
I think I am, yeah.
I really like that.
So they're really, really fun plants. Even though, you know, we love our Californian weather and everything, I think all of us like to see the change in the color for autumn.
We do, and I think most of us, at least me, I always think about the spring blooming, you know, winter blooming, spring blooming plants, and I always forget that I should plan and have something interesting and pretty in the garden in the fall. My garden really needs more help in the fall.
It's really important, isn't it? Yeah. Because and this ties into the outdoor room, where you know the European concept. It is a garden, but it's also an outdoor room, somewhere where you know you're with your family and your friends and you're out
there
doing
it.
Yeah. And by the way, I think I mentioned this last time, listeners at home. How are you doing with the banishment of the word yard? It's not a yard, it's a garden.
No backyards anymore.
That's it. No back or front yards, they're gardens. Right? Right. So what I did, I just ran down some lists of things to plant for next year, and we're going to finish off with a flurry on perennials. Trees. So fall or autumn is just a wonderful time to plant your trees. And I'm sure all of you, you're in the greengrocers or, you know, you're out over at your friend's house and they might have harvested apples this year. And you thought, I'd love an apple tree in my garden. And Tina, you know a lot more about apples than I do. But the apple that the master gardeners turned my head to some years ago was Anna.
Anna, I've got an espaliered Anna in my backyard.
Yeah. And I hear she is the best.
Well, she's prolific. I mean, she, you know, if she's not your favorite apple taste-wise, you know, maybe you prefer Fuji or a different one, but she is so prolific. I love her because she just gives me so much off of this little tiny espalier tree.
I heard whispers that at the food and farm lab that the apples, the Annas there, would provide fruit year-round. Is that true?
They do. They're so weird. Every time you do, it seems like every time you touch them, so when we espalier the trees, as you know, out at the Farm and Food Lab, and so you have to constantly do a little pruning on them year-round because you don't want the growth that's coming in the wrong direction since they are espaliered flat against a fence. And it seems like every time we touch them with hand pruners, they blossom and we get more fruit.
Wow.
So I'm not sure why that is botanically, but they do. They basically give us fruit off and on all year.
Does she require a pollinator?
You know, I don't believe so, but I would have to look that up. We do have multiple trees out there, so it could be that we have the pollinators.
Yeah.
I just don't remember, sadly. Yeah.
We'll cover that next time.
We'll cover that next time when I can look it up. Yeah.
So Anna has a sister plant.
Oh.
And she's a real best kept secret. I have not seen her for sale in California, but who knows. And her sister plant, I think it's called Tropicana. And both these plants were originally bred in Israel. That's where they come from.
So maybe similar climate to
us. Yeah, fantastic. So Anna, the other plant, we've all been besotted by these blueberries that, you know, southern high bushes, they're calling them because they, you know, they can live in our climate. And the two, there's several varieties, but the two winning varieties of all are Sunshine Blue and Bountiful Blue. And if we plant those now, personally, I believe they should be in a container. What do you think, Tina?
Absolutely in a container. We have tried them in the ground, and our soil is not acidic enough. Mm. And even if you're diligent about trying to have acidic amendments and fertilizers, they just struggle. So out at the Farm and Food Lab, we ended up planting 35 of them or so in boxes.
Well, I remember those.
Planter boxes are, each box is probably 18 inches by 18 inches, and we used an acidic soil mix, and then we just top it, you know, every year with a little bit more acidic soil mix, and then, you know, give them fertilizer, and they produce like crazy.
Fantastic, isn't it? Yeah.
And I've had the same experience at home. The ones that I have in containers do great. The ones I've tried to plant in the ground are dead within 3 years.
So Sunshine Blue and Bountiful Blue. Sunshine Blue and Bountiful Blue. So here's a new idea for the garden. We plant blueberries for ourselves, but it is also a fantastic food source for the birds.
They come to my house.
So I am sowing the seeds to all of you out there that you're going to buy two or three blueberries, but you're going to have to net these, right? And you net from the bottom, okay?
Yes.
If you net from the top, the birds will figure out the hole down by the stem.
They are smart little guys.
Very smart.
And then the sad thing is they sometimes get caught and can't get out. I've had that happen.
So you have to let them out.
You have to let them out, or I have found one that didn't make it because I wasn't around. Poor thing. So you're absolutely right. Net from the bottom and make sure they can't fly up in there, or it could be a sad consequence.
Yeah, we love our birds.
Yes. And but so you're going to leave one for the birds?
I'm going to leave one or two for the birds.
That's so sweet.
And where I live, my garden's a mess, right? But where I live, we've got this cornucopia of birds. And my blueberries went to the compost heap last year, so I need to get some more. I never harvested one blueberry because the birds got them all. But I had such fun watching the birds. It was really great. So blueberries. Then it's been a hot summer, and I'm sure all of you have suffered. I know I have.
Oh, I've lost
a
number of plants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trees.
We're all watching our water.
That's very, very true.
It results in some unhappy consequences.
It has. So we should be thinking about trees. And I'm going
to
leave this to you.
Give us some shade.
Some shade.
Ah.
Yeah. So some of the trees, just to suggest, and these are really drought tolerant varieties. And prior to your purchase, with your nursery professional, where you're buying your plants, or a friendly master gardener, seek their advice. So my picks are acacias. You know, different varieties of acacias. Many of them are very foliferous. Shalopsis, otherwise known as desert willows, which are my favorite. Yeah, they're going to be deciduous in this part of the world.
Could you spell that for our? Because I know for me that's a toughie. Yeah.
So Shalopsis is Chilopsis.
I almost got it. I only had an extra R in there.
Ah, no problem. No one would have noticed, Tina. And so you've got your Shalopsis, different varieties. The leader of the pack is one from Monrovia called Timeless Beauty. And here's one you have to get. This is a plant that you might have to wait a year or two to get. But there's a brand new one from Mountain States called, Dazzle Wine.
Ooh, I love the name. Wine. Dazzle Wine.
And the flower is a deep magenta purple.
Oh, trees that flower, my favorite.
It's really,
wow.
It's really killer.
Wow.
She's got a very rounded form. She'll probably get 18 to 25 feet high if you let her. Across.
That's a nice height for suburban yards.
I think
Not too tall, not like a sycamore.
That's correct, yeah. And Dazzle Wine has got the deepest, greenest foliage of any desert willow I've come across.
Oh.
And when I was at the nursery, they have other varieties called Bubba and Arts Seedless. And we have Dazzle Wine, and you can just see her foliage is much greener.
Oh, cool.
So look for the Shalopsis. And then Cercidium.
Another one we should spell.
Yeah, Cercidium. Otherwise known as the Palo Verde tree.
Oh, that's how I know it. Yes.
Yeah, so Palo Verde. For those of you at home, Palo Verde. The one to ask for is called Desert Museum. And Desert Museum has the bright, 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 bright butter yellow flowers and a long blooming season. They have magnificent soft green bark. I mean, it's really spectacular.
You know what's sad is that we haven't seen them here in Orange County much until recently. We're just now beginning to see them. But on trips out to Palm Springs or Palm Desert, you know, of course, they've been out there for years. And they're stunning.
Yeah,
I'm so glad we're going to see more of them.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
So gardener's tip.
Yes.
The tip is when you buy your plant, Look for a plant that's very evenly and strongly branched. These trees have a habit that they're a little on the brittle side. So if you go out to Arizona, where there are just millions of these trees, then after a windstorm, they've broken limbs and just all sorts of things. So it's a tree that needs a little bit of massaging, some regular pruning. Don't let the boughs get too heavy, and you'll be rewarded handsomely. Dappled shade. You know, you're not going to get deep shade, but dappled shade. And then Chinese pistachios. We were just talking about those.
I have one of those in my yard.
Great for the autumn color. They turn brilliant red, and a really nice shade tree for the garden.
Those also, I have found, benefit from pruning, especially early, because their branches tend to be somewhat haphazard.
Yeah, get shape to them.
And you can get, kind of a funky shape if you don't give them a little pruning, especially when they're young.
And garden tip two, go to, if you don't have a friend that can help you with good advice, spend the extra few dollars on a certified arborist.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying there aren't folks out there that don't know how to prune trees, but the arborists really do know how to prune a tree. And the damage that can be done in the early years of a tree, from which they'll never recover from.
Absolutely.
They'll never look good, will they, Tina? They just don't, So seek out your local arborist.
And do get a certified arborist, because we have seen so many examples in our community of supposedly professional tree trimming companies that just come and do terrible things.
Terrible.
Lion's tailing and pollarding and to trees that shouldn't have that done to them. So a certified arborist is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, money well spent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I guess, you know, if two or three of you are going to have some trees done, get together. You know, if he's gonna be there for 3 or 4 days, he'll work on his price.
That's a great idea. Yeah. I never thought of that. Yeah. If he knows he has a whole day's worth of work.
That's right. Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of these chaps will have chippers with them. Mm-hmm. Keep the mulch.
Oh.
Put the mulch in a place in the garden and share it with your friends or whatever, because you can use that.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny, when I had to have a couple of trees removed, they thought I was nuts because I asked them to leave the mulch and to leave the, because we had to have the whole tree removed, to leave the cut wood, because they were oaks.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's going to be great firewood. I'm going to let it age for a couple of years. So don't take it away. But they thought I was kind of crazy. Nobody had ever asked to leave that stuff.
Yeah, these are good. These are all great tips.
Yeah.
And then one of my very favorite trees, it's a cassia, C-A-S-S-I-A. And the cassia, it's a deciduous plant. The tree, the largest cassia of this variety I'm going to mention, I haven't seen over like 18 feet high and 18, 20 feet across, called Splendida Golden. And Cassia Splendida Golden is a name variety. If memory serves me well, she's a late summer autumn bloom.
Her
flowers.
Time of year.
Oh, God.
Nothing else is blooming.
Yeah, this plant is really there. Big yellow buttercup gold. You know, yellow gold flowers.
And nice size.
Oh, huge.
For a suburban garden.
Yeah. Great plant. I have been watching a cassia that's in a neighbor's garden, and this plant has been blooming probably for about 3-4 months.
No way.
So this is there's something unusual going on with this plant. So I'm going to try and get some cuttings from it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all I'm going to say. So that's just a wonderful blooming plant. This yellow is a real cool color. It's fresh. Signifies vibrance, happiness.
I love yellow. Yeah. It just makes me happy.
It's great. And then my last grass, I have to look at my list here. My last tree, sorry, grass is an X. My last tree is mesquite.
Another desert, good desert.
Yeah, wonderful desert plant. Does great in our climate. And the desert mesquite, as God made it, is just... they're large, they're ungainly, they tend to have a lot of thorns on them.
Yeah.
So when you go make your selection, ask for the thornless varieties. I think there's one called Maverick, which is thornless, and there's another variety. Mountain States carries a couple of great thornless varieties. If you can get the brand new variety, which comes out of a nursery in Tucson, Arizona, it's the name of the plant is Leslie Roy. So it's Prosopis. I think that's mesquite, right? Don't ask me how to spell it.
So, but
the cultivar selection is called Leslie Roy. Leslie Roy is a very upright, it's an upright vase-shaped form, almost thornless. It's the nicest form I've ever seen. Really great, great plant. And these are good plants for nesting birds and, you know, sentry birds and stuff like this.
We love attracting wildlife. That's an extra good bonus.
You know, which just gives me a memory jog. If you said to me, Nicholas, what's the best plant for a nesting bird? And it's probably a plant that you have not planted in your garden for about 300 years. And it's Pyracantha.
Really?
Yep. Pick out the... go to the garden center. Not many people sell them anymore because it's an old plant.
Yeah, my parents always had them in their
They're evergreen.
Yeah.
They get big rosettes of flowers. They get covered with orange or yellow berries.
Yeah.
The birds love them. There's one called Grabrii, which has red berries. And then there's Yukon Bell that has orange berries. But they are just the thorniest, wildest things that you have ever laid eyes upon. But do you know what? The birds will get in there and they will make all their nests. They're quite happy, but cats can't get in there.
Oh,
you know,
that's true.
But you know, animals and rodents,
they're
they find
protected.
It very difficult to navigate through these plants. The thorns are huge, right? So you have to be. And here's the fun part. Well, I guess this is fun. They are also used as a larder. You chaps call them a larder.
larder.
Yeah, larder that you put your food in.
Uh-huh.
They're used as a larder for a bird called a butcher bird.
Huh.
And we have butcher birds around here. Butcher birds will catch lizards and other small animals, and they will impale these small animals and mammals, etc., on the thorns. And it's a larder. And they like these animals and other things when they're kind of, they're decomposing, and that's when they'll go back and eat them.
You know, I'm going to get one of those because the mice where I live are a little problematic.
Yeah.
So I would love if someone would catch those and eat them.
Yeah. So,
well, Nicholas, we're going to take just a break. It's that time where I need to identify the station. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And a reminder that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Okay, I think we're going to move on to grasses.
Grasses.
Which I'm really excited about because, as I shared with you before we started, we in my neighborhood have been asked to remove all of the Mexican feather grass because it has been listed as an invasive plant because it self-sows, you know, quite vigorously. And so I'm in the market for some new grasses. So I'm hoping to learn lots from you today.
Excellent.
About what my choices are.
All right. Well, good, good. So interestingly enough, on the grass you mentioned, it's a native to Texas.
Is it?
Yeah, and so when I was working for Monrovia, one of the things we actually stopped growing the Mexican feather grass.
You did.
Yeah,
because of the invasive.
Yeah, because of its invasive nature, and you know, we just took it right off the map.
Yeah.
But it's still used extensively.
It is,
by other folks. So you know, we work our way through that. So it's becoming grass time of year. And grasses are becoming more and more popular in California. So you have your dwarf grasses, you have your sedges. A lot of the sedges are really fun. There are a lot of wonderful grasses that do well in dappled shade areas as well.
Oh, which is always problematic.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And but the I tend to like the bolder grasses. My favorite group of grasses are the Muhlenbergias, or the deer grasses. And that's the deer on four legs, right? So Muhlenbergia is Muhlenbergia. Now, the Muhlenbergia that has ridden the crest of the wave for years and years is called Regal Mist. And Regal Mist is actually a Mountain State selection, fabulous plant, sold at many of the garden centers. My hope would be that you would not have a problem finding that plant. The new one coming to the market, and Tina and I were talking about this a little earlier, is called Plumetastic. So Plumetastic. There's a long story behind this plant that I bent Tina's ear on, and I'm not going to bend yours on it, right? But
Plumetastic. Let's just say it was a found plant that Nicholas spotted that was gorgeous, and now it's going to be in production so that we can also enjoy it. And I saw pictures of it earlier on his computer, and let me tell you, I have never seen a grass this color.
Something.
And
yeah.
I'm lusting after it.
Fantastic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Plumetastic is really one to look for.
And it's coming out this fall, right?
There should be plants on the market this fall.
Yeah.
Chances are it's a small release. You'll find them more in the independent garden centers, I would believe. So the plant gets about 4.5 feet high, 4 to 5 feet across, has a wonderful vase shape. It's a very strong, upright grower. She doesn't flop open. With these deep purple amethyst-colored plumes. And she starts pluming a little after the other Muhlenbergia's plume. So you might think, gosh, mine's not going to do anything, and then she starts.
Uh-huh.
But she plumes much longer. And when she's gone through her pluming season, you've still got these very attractive seed heads.
Oh, wow. So they don't get floppy and ugly.
No. Uh-huh. She keeps that shape.
Uh-huh.
So the rule of thumb with Muhlenbergias is like in the early spring before they start to push, that's when most people will cut theirs back.
Uh-huh.
And so I've never cut mine back. I'm just leaving her. So I'm going to leave her probably for a couple of 3 years to see what she does.
What happens.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we've got Regal Mist, we've got Plumetastic. The other one is called Dumosa, Dumosa, otherwise known as the bamboo Muhlenbergia. Now, she is a Muhlenbergia, but she actually looks like a clump of bamboo.
Interesting.
Very, very attractive with these arching stems. And I
not invasive.
Mm-hmm. No. And they call them deer grass. I'm pretty sure the deer won't graze them if we were lucky enough to see one. Have you ever seen a deer here?
Oh, we have lots of deer.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. We have lots of deer grass, too, and you are right. They do not
graze
the deer grass.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's called deer grass, but I've never seen one graze on that.
Wow.
They like my lawn better.
The green grass.
I have a tiny bit of lawn, and they think that's lovely, as well as the peaches when there are peaches on the peach
tree. they are deer with good taste.
It's a smorgasbord here.
Yeah, that's fun. So we've got the Muhlenbergias. The other group of grasses to look for are Miscanthus.
Mm, I love that.
And the Miscanthus, there's so many different varieties. They are taller in their growth habit. And the late summer, autumn, they'll put on these magnificent plumes that you can harvest. And if you spray them with your lady's hairspray, the plumes, then the plumes won't shatter.
That is such a good tip because I love using them in bouquets.
Ah,
they look stunning,
give
but
them
they're
a spray.
Messy.
Yeah.
I did not know that. What a great tip.
That kind of holds them on there. The other thing you can use your lady's hairspray for is, do you know rushes or reeds?
Yes. Uh-huh,
and when the rushes when or the seed heads, they're right. like a big cigar.
Right.
They kind of explode.
Right.
So if you spray them with your that lady's hairspray, it will hold them tighter to the stem.
Wow.
They're still going to explode one day,
but longer,
they'll still
yeah
you have them for longer. So
great tip.
Yeah, these are all fun. With miscanthus, there are also some variegated flavors. And one of my favorite is called Gold Bar. It has a wide stem or strap, and then you've got these wonderful gold blotches that go all the way out the blade of grass. And then there are silver variegated varieties. The best silver one is called Morning Light. A Morning Light, if memory serves me well, has an emerald green center with a silver white margin.
Oh,
that's a real,
wow.
Yeah, really a killer looking
that
plant. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
And so there's a big conversation right now about the invasiveness of miscanthus. So the jury is very much out. But I would ask you where you plant your miscanthus. If you're somewhere near a riparian area, then where I live, it's very, I live in the hills. And so I've actually found a couple of grasses that have come up near my grass that were obviously seeds that germinated. And I just dug those up quickly and put them in the green waste bin where they get composted. So I've seen that maybe just once or twice. So, and I get lots of plumes. And I look around me for maybe
a
couple
of
300 yards. I never see them coming come up.
Right.
So they're kind of fun. All right, so perennials.
Yes,
all right.
Yes. Well, we've been, trees and grasses are perennials, but now we're going to talk about. We have 20 minutes left, a little less than 20 minutes.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
Okay.
I know, these hours always go
by so
fast.
Yeah, they go so fast. So on the perennials, that there are, we're so lucky with our perennials in Southern California, one of the things I would advise you to do, it's called garden peeping, right? So it can be...
But be careful. Don't do it at night.
You might get arrested, yeah. Yeah. When I travel, one of the things I do is I'll walk the neighborhoods and look over people's fences. And on more than one occasion, the police car is pulled up beside me.
No way.
Yeah, because I'm pacing the neighborhood, right?
That's
but,
so fun.
Yeah, but,
no, I'm a plant detective. Yeah. It's okay.
And people say, yeah. Driver's license. You know.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
But walk your neighborhoods and see what's really doing well in your neighbor's gardens. And go to other neighborhoods as well. Go to Sherman Library.
Yes.
Go to Huntington Library. The Huntington Library have just put this fantastic new California garden, and lots of they have a cornucopia of perennials which have been blooming since early spring. You might have to they're trying to do a better job on the signage, but you can see what's in plume and or flower, and they'll give you the names of them. Rancho Santa Ana Botanical Garden up in Claremont.
Mm-hmm.
All good places. And then while you're there, park your car and go walk around the neighborhoods. You know, look in the shady areas. Look and see what's looking good in the shady areas, etc. So, all right. So eyes down, look in. Like it's a game of bingo, right? So I'm going to start mentioning some plants. So agaras, GAURA, garas, and I think that's their common name as well. There are lots of different varieties on the market. There are small varieties, there are large growing varieties. You've got some of them have rose colored flowers, some of them have red flowers, some of them have white flowers. Just a great drought tolerant perennial. One day Tina's going to invite me back and we're just going to do a show on animals and wildlife. One of the big areas of interest for me is moths.
Oh,
right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
And one of my next book purchases is going to be a book on moths. So, moths can be a curse on our lives because, they get into the wardrobe and they eat your favorite woolen cardigan, whatever it might be.
Or those darn cabbage moths are always eating my veggies.
They, you know what they are. Mm-hmm. But there are so many beautiful moths. And one of them is the sphinx moth or hawk moth, H-A-W-K, right? And I'm sure some of you will have pulled these great, I call it the great green horned tomato worm.
Yes.
These big green ones. Mm-hmm. But they will turn into a hawk moth or a sphinx moth. There's about 40 different varieties. And they're the size of a small hummingbird, depending on the variety. They come out early in the morning and late at night. And I've actually had them come. They're completely fearless of you. They will hover right beside you, and you think it's a hummingbird, but it's this moth. And they have this long tongue that comes out, and they will go, they'll put their tongue in and they'll feed off the pollen, right? So it's a great way of pollinating plants as well. So
I'm glad there's a good purpose to them, because when I see them on my tomato plants, they don't live long in my garden.
Okay, tip. All right, tip yes. three.
Yes.
Tip three. Have a sacrificial tomato plant.
And let them have their way. Okay.
Because these are exquisite creatures, and I know that you have them in your garden. It's just that maybe you've not seen them, or
I probably didn't make the connection between the nasty worm that was eating
my
tomato plant. Yeah,
it's amazing.
I got out the BT instead.
Yeah, that's it. Got rid of them. So anyway, the whole moth thing. Garas are a real attractant to moths.
Oh.
And I had a white gara, which actually I lost this year. I had it in the garden for a couple of years. I'm not sure if they're very long-lived, but they're worth having, because they do flower so prolifically. Very often they're open in the really early morning when a lot of the moths are active. So I used to go out there at the crack of dawn and sit by this this gara, and the amount of butterflies and moths that would come to it were fantastic.
You know, I didn't realize that, because my garas that I've planted I've done in the front yard, and there's no seeding out there. So I'll have to try some in the backyard.
Yeah.
But the thing I like about the garas, too, is even though they do only last for a couple of years, you can buy them in 4-inch pots.
They're
so
not expensive.
They're inexpensive, easy to plant.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. I think you should just treat them, you know, as a, not quite an annual, but something that you replace fairly
frequently.
They're
fun, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then, now here's a new one. This is the plant I'm learning about. Desert marigolds. Have you heard of a desert marigold, Tina?
I have, but I don't have any.
Right, so desert marigolds, you, at home you might hear me swishing through the pages. Desert marigolds are one of the most foliferous plants I've seen. And they're an early spring bloomer. The botanical name is Baileyna, B-A-I-L-E-Y-A. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But they're native to the southwestern U.S. and southern Mexico. So they should do extremely well in our climate. I am I'm getting a real education working with Mountain States on a lot of these desert perennials that will work famously well here. Now, here's the good news. They self-seed.
Oh,
so
I love that.
They really look incredible. There's a picture of me floating around somewhere on the internet of me at one of the old nursery sites of Mountain States, and I'm kneeling down in several hundred square feet
I
of self-sown.
It's
awesome. You did?
I did. Yeah.
Oh, and it's I just love it.
Yeah.
Full of honeybees. Okay, desert marigolds. Chocolate flowers, which many of you are familiar with. These are the perennial. It's a yellow flower with a kind of a brownish center. And I'm using the common names because it's a bit easier for everyone. And they smell like chocolate. They are exquisite. Hymenoxus, H-Y-M-E-O-X-Y-S. Hymenoxus, otherwise known as Angelica daisies. These are a must-have. They're a small perennial with bright yellow flowers, and they're easily killed by overwatering.
Ah.
So they need a kind of a drier site. I'm turning my pages. Okay.
Looking at his notes, he's going to see these notes. I'm going to steal his notes.
Blackfoot daisy is a small white daisy flower. Turns into a clump, which is a must-have. Penstemons. The book I have open right now has got three or four penstemons. And the penstemons are great for hummingbirds and for butterflies, all sorts of flavors. Canyon penstemon, coral penstemon, firecracker penstemon, Parry's, P-A-R-R-Y-S, penstemon. There's a new one coming out from the Plant Select program that I know David Salmon will have from High Country Gardens called Coral Baby, C-O-R-A-L, Baby, B-A-B-Y. A smaller, more compact grower with this real deep coral flower. Oh. Has a nice glossy foliage. Real killer plant. Salvias. Lots of salvias.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to embarrass myself because I cannot remember the name of this plant. But there is a purple salvia that the team at Rogers Gardens introduced me to. Rex Yarwood is the buyer. Ron Vanderhoff is the GM. I mean, both exquisite plantsmen, just great plants people. Do you know, I think they've opened their restaurant up.
It was under construction last time I was there. Is it open now?
I think I saw something on the internet.
Fun.
So,
fun.
Anyway, if you went to Ron and said Nicholas was on the radio the other day talking about this purple salvia that he had never seen anything like, Ron will say, oh yeah, that's blah de blah de blah, blah. He'll know it exactly that. And then so there's another great series of salvias on the market called the Heat Wave series.
Okay.
And there's a red, and there's a red, there's a
a
white,
there's a coral too.
Yeah, coral. Yeah, yeah. They're all good. They're all good varieties. Why they're so good, listeners at home, is that they some of the salvias will pack up blooming during the hottest of heat, hot weather. And so the reason I brought this group to market was they don't stop blooming during the hot weather.
Do they get powdery mildew? 'Cause I know
we've not seen that issue.
That's good.
And then the salvia that, of course, I think remains our favorite is the Clevelandi salvias. And the one that we all love is Winifred Gilman. And, you know, once established, these will probably get 5 feet high, and they're rambunctious and they're spreading. But they have these great sort of purple, blue, lavender-colored flowers. They're great. Hummingbirds, butterflies, you know, you just let them go.
How long's the life on those? Are they short-lived or are they longer-lived?
No, that's a $65,000 question. I think if you try and mollycoddle them and look after them, I think they're going to die.
Okay.
I think if you forget about them and give them a drink when they kind of might need a drink and just don't prune them, you're going to have to put them in a big spot because that's what they love to do. I've been watching a group of Clevelandis because I found a collection of about 40 or 50 plants.
Uh-huh.
And I'm actually watching them to see if I can make a selection, see if one of them maybe is a bit more, because there's going to be some seedlings coming up. So that's kind of exciting. But there are plants in this group that I think have been there for maybe 8-9 years. And that to me is somewhat long-lived. Oh, she just gave me the 5 minute sign.
Okay. I know, it's so sad.
All right,
but
so
you'll be back. You'll be back another time.
So I'm going to move a little more briskly. Phlomis, Phlomis, Jerusalem sage. I did mention these last time. Look for Grande Verde, V-E-R-D-A. Grande Verde has the hugest, greenest leaf of all, with these beautiful yellow flowers. There's also a species variety, and then there's another one that has a pink or soft purple flower. Yuccas, look for Yucca Golden Sword or Yucca color guard. These are variegated varieties with beautiful sprays of white flowers, and they are classed as perennials. They'll live for a long time. Verbenas. This is the one plant you have to buy for your garden. Verbena. This is D. Lamina. So D E new word L A Mina M I N A, otherwise known as the Cedrus Island verbena, C E D R O S, and this island is off Baja. I planted a 4-inch in my garden in spring. She does not stop blooming, and she's now about 16 inches across and about 18 inches high.
Oh, my gosh. She's
yeah, great. She's going to get about 3 feet high and 3 feet across. Oh, give her room. Stunning.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then the Hesperellas, the red-flowering yuccas, bit of a stretch for a perennial maybe, but look for the varieties Break Lights. And two new varieties on the market, Desert Flamenco. So as the flamenco dance, the longest blooming of any of the Hesperellas, even maybe a bit longer than Break Lights, but has this great pink flower, a lot of branching on the stem. And then another one called Pink Parade. Pink Parade will only bloom for about 5 weeks, but her flower is 6 to 7 feet tall.
Whoa.
Stunning, absolutely stunning.
That'll get your attention.
And then lastly, my love affair continues with a Pelargonium, P-E-L-A-R-G-O-N-I-U-M, Burgundy, otherwise known as the South African Geranium. This is a small gray-leafed or silver-leaf pelargonium. It's a perennial with us, has these exquisite small purple flowers. And I've got it in areas that are really lacking for water, and I've got it in areas where they get a sprinkle, you know, once maybe twice a week, and they really look fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. Gosh, I have pages and pages of notes. And sadly, we've reached the end of our time. It's always so sad. I know. But you gave us some great ideas for
Thank you.
Great ideas for our fall planting. And we would love to have you back.
Thank you. I'll be back.
Good,
thank you.
Good. Thanks again. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And have a great time planting in your garden this fall.